Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there, if you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to another Anime Boston 2018 interview podcast special. On today's episode, we'll be chatting with legendary voice actress Mary Elizabeth McGlynn. You may have heard McGlynn's voice in OKKO Let's Be Heroes as Dynamite Watkins, Lady Jaguara in Wolf's Reign, Julia in Cowboy Bebop, and Hilda in Outlaw Star. Her most famous role, however, is that of Major Motoku Kusanagi in the series Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, one of those rare instances where the TV adaptation outshined its film predecessor. B3 was joined by Wicked Anime, Convention Scene, Anime Herald, Nerd Caliber, Toonami Faithful, and the Geekly Grind in this most secret of press interviews. So let's head on over to Section 9 and embark on this Anime Boston 2018 interview special with Mary Elizabeth McGlynn.
I was going to make you roll for initiative, but all right.
I don't want to keep track of that.
You play D&D?
What the?
Are you on a show?
I just bought these turquoise dice, and they separated out in a pillbox. I mean, come on. They're so pretty. Okay. Hi.
Hi. My name is Colin Solon. I'm with ConventionScene.com.
Hey, Colin.
I was wondering, so what is the challenge as a voice actor when you're doing a dub of an anime versus creating a character from whole cloth and being the first actor to work on it?
Well, when you're doing anime, it's somebody else's vision, somebody's already voiced it, somebody's already animated it, and you are constrained by the timing of the beat, when that first flip-flap starts to when it ends. So as an actor, you're sort of constrained by the timing of someone else's performance. Now, what you do within that, it's like, what's the difference, you know, the distance between two points is infinity, and you kind of have to think about it that way, otherwise you're always going to feel like, I'm so constrained. So you really do have some leeway in between, and it's really sort of a fine art to be able to finesse the ins and out of it so you don't end up talking like this, you know, which is done very well for our fabulous Mr. Shatner, who we adore deeply, but it's, to try and make it sound natural and fluid within the constraints of someone else's performance is always the challenge, and I feel like that's when you need a really good writer that knows that I've got to pause here, I've got to pause here, and then I've got to continue and then pause one more time and figure out how to break up a sentence or a thought or a moment and still have it sound fluid and natural within those constraints. When you're doing prelay or original animation, you are usually only constrained by your own imagination at that point. When I direct Tangled the series, and when we have, you know, Mandy or Zach come in, and they get to play, and they really don't have to be constrained by anything else other than where we feel the character needs to go. But it's a very collaborative effort, so in terms of timing, it's a much different experience. So, you're welcome.
Hi, I'm Samantha Furrow from It May Help.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Your hair is fabulous.
Thank you. As someone's been in the industry for so long, what would you say has been the biggest, most substantial change from your perspective?
I think probably the technology. When I first started, if you talk to Barbara Goodson or Richard Epcar, they're like, well, when we started, there were no beeps. But like, I started when there was beeps. But we were doing everything analog in terms of the technology. And then it switched over to digital, and Pro Tools became a part of the equation, which meant we, as a director, I had a lot more flexibility in terms of taking these constrained moments and messing with them. I could take two separate takes, chop them up, especially when we did Cowboy Bebop. We would do three episodes over 2 weeks. So we would record for a week and a half, and then, or a week and 2 days, and then I would have usually a day and a half to 2 days to QC the whole thing, so I could watch it and say, ooh, what other takes do we have there? Cut up takes, put them together, stretch it if it wasn't long enough so you can really finesse the lip sync to make it look like it was animated for English, which I feel like is always the challenge for dubbing, is to try and make it look like this was actually animated for whatever language you happen to be dubbing it into, whether it's French, Spanish, English, or whatever. So I think the technology has really benefited the industry a lot. It's been able to let us really fine-tune shows and moments and performances that we just didn't have time to do in the past because of the analog. It's like, if it didn't work, if you mess one word, I'd be like, all right, let's start over. Do it again, and you may not be able to capture that lightning in a bottle that you had for that initial take. So you got to go back and do it again and again and again. So the technology has really, I think, made the biggest difference. And the amount of content, to be honest. There's so much out there. And I mean, across the board. People come up to me and like, have you watched Wild Wild Country? I'm like, where are all these shows now? It's just amazing. So I think what's great is that there's so much more product out there now because the technology has made it a lot easier for people to create their own vision of new shows.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Lynn Kelly with Nerd Caliber, and based on my cosplay, you can probably guess what kind of questions I'm going to ask.
Cowboy Bebop.
Right. Of course. And going off of your most recent role as Queen Natalia.
Oh, yeah.
You're a villainess in this one. In a strange way, do you ever feel like you relate to, in this case, a villain? Because I know a lot of voice actors will find that they relate to characters some way or another, but oddly enough, do you ever find yourself relating to this character?
So you're asking me if I'm a terrible human being, is what you're asking. And the answer is yes. No, I don't know. I think there's something about playing villains. I just played Governor Price in Star Wars Rebels, and she had such a clear vision of what she wanted. And I think most villains do. There's usually very little conflict in a villainous person. They know exactly what they want, and they're usually going to do whatever it takes to get it, and the difference between the characters would be how they go about getting whatever it is they want, whether they, like to. Governor Price was very fond of torture, for instance. Queen Natalia was just sort of this presence, and it's easier to make choices, strong choices with villains, I think. The hero is always conflicted. There's always conflict on the journey of the hero. So I think in that respect, it's more difficult to get in there and really find yourself within a character because you have to know sort of the whole arc of where the character's going to go. So I think in terms of relating, I have a lot more conflict in me than the villains that I play. But every now and then I get to play someone like Motoko from the Major from Ghost in the Shell, who also had a lot of conflicts and everything else, but she was such a strong character through most of it and being in charge that it was easier for me to dive into her shell, as it were, than it was for like Noriko or for other characters that had a lot more conflict. So, yeah. You're welcome. And yes, I'm a terrible person.
I'm CJ Mappers with TsunamiFable.com.
Hey!
Hello.
Hey!
Tsunami.
That's probably the best reaction I've gotten from anyone I've interviewed.
Even Steve?
He was gracious, but I was very enthusiastic.
Oh, I love Tsunami. Most of our stuff would never have been seen were it not for Tsunami. When we were doing Bebop, I just thought, well, nobody's ever going to see the show, so let's just do it for us. And then when it finally got exposure, you guys were you're necessary to get our what we do out there.
You know, it just keeps on airing.
Yeah, over and over.
I'm curious, though, about Ghost in the Shell, considering your role in it.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the Hollywood movie that came out recently? I don't know if you have talked about it. I don't know if you have any opinions at all, but I am curious, considering you were the voice of the major. How you felt about it, and if you even saw it?
Well, you know, there are a lot of... How many people have played Batman? How many people have played Superman? So I think for one person to say... And I wasn't the first... Major. First of all, the amazing actress from Japan is the one who originated the role, and then I think Mimi did it in the first movie, and then I took over, and now there's another actress in Texas doing Arise. So for me to lay claim, or really anyone to lay claim for anything but Zara in Critical Role, for me, that's the only character I've ever created. So I love Scarlett Johansson. I think she's one of the greatest young actors of our time. I just adore her, and I knew just from her past work, one, that she could handle the physicality of it, two, she could handle all the intellect of it, because she, after Lucy, for me, I love Lucy, she could obviously play someone incredibly intelligent. So I thought visually it was stunning. I had some issues with stuff, but you always do. I mean, it's hard not to. If they ever do a Cowboy Bebop series, I'm sure I'm going to be sitting there going, why would you make that choice? And hopefully at the end of the day, I'm going to love it, you know. So I don't believe any actor should be able to say, that's mine, that's my voice, I am the original, you know. I mean, it's just like, yeah, you're the original, but eventually you're going to pass that mantle on to someone else. So I applaud her for her performance and for the movie. I mean, anything that can get what we do out to a bigger audience is great. Because if someone sees that movie and says, what is this based on? And then they'll go back, hopefully, and see the original animated, the movies and Ghost in the Shell, the series, Get Sack, everything else. So anything that can bring them closer and to connect all of these nerd worlds of joy, I'm all for it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi there, my name is Evan Borgo. I am from the Boston Bastard Brigade.
The Boston Bastard Brigade.
Bastard's by name, not by reputation.
Got it. Love it.
And also the host of the No Borders, No Race podcast show, where we promote Japanese musicians and alternative artists as well.
Oh, cool. How
so
fun.
The anime that made me a fan of anime was Outlaw Star.
Yay!
And while it was a supporting role, Hilda is the character that initiates the adventure that the main characters are about to have. I know it's been a bit of a while, but can you discuss your time recording that role and how you captured both her toughness and her level-headed personality?
Well, the thing about anime is that we don't get the scripts beforehand. We can't see it beforehand. At least we couldn't back in the day. So 100% I rely on my director, and that director was the incomparable Wendy Lee. So I relied 100% on Wendy's guidance, and she led me through that amazing world and that amazing short time frame that Hilda happened to be there, you know. So, and usually it's you only get to see the moments that you're in, so in terms of the broad picture, I had to completely rely on Wendy. So it was a fully collaborative effort between me and her. And I love working with Wendy, so I'm very grateful that she cast me, or Yutaka Maseba and Kevin Seymour cast me in such a small but pivotal role. It's kind of nice to sort of come in, you know, a little bit and just be like, and then leave, you know? I mean, it's nice to have those moments of, you know, play a pivotal character that doesn't have to spend the whole time, that just comes in a little bit and then goes. So, yeah. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Andrew Fleming from Wicked Anime.
Wicked.
My brother from Wicked Anime, Jonathan Fleming.
Who's older?
I am 8 minutes.
Identical twins.
Yes.
I'm an identical twin.
Really?
I'm 6 minutes older.
What's your twin power?
Sorry,
I know we're supposed to.
That's not a question.
to say the most inappropriate thing at the most appropriate time. I told Andrew Lloyd Webber how much I loved his work on Les Mis. So that'll give you some idea of that superpower. It happens all the time.
And just like everybody has a favorite Batman, you're the favorite major.
Oh, yay, thanks.
But I asked the same question to Steve, and I'm going to ask the same question to you as well. What is the worst job you have ever had before entering the anime industry?
Oh, man, I worked in this bar where I had to spin the wheel every 15 minutes to see, what's the special? And it was just, it was so degrading because nobody's paying attention to you, and I just sort of felt like this reject Vanna White. Okay, let's spin it! You know, and I'm not perky. I'm not someone to get up there and, hey, everybody, let's check out the clam sauce. You know, it really wasn't me. So yeah, that was pretty crummy. I never had to do. I mean, I had when I was in graduate. I got through graduate school with four jobs at once. When I was in Texas, and I was cleaning houses, and I was trying to very poorly to teach voiceover, and I was working as a waitress and arranging travel for other stuff. So it was, it's. You know, we all got to go through that. Everybody's got to pay your dues and do what you can to be able to survive, you know, and pursue whatever dream that you want. So, yeah. But the spinning the wheel was, you know, I mean, how hard is that? Any idiot, they could have had a monkey in there doing it. I mean, it was just like nobody, and the monkey would have been smarter than me at that point. So, yeah, it was really stupid.
Yes.
And degrading. Yeah. So... yeah, it's fantastic. What did Steve say?
Steve had three, but one of them was...
Was the fire extinguishers?
No, that was the first one he told, but I think the worst one came to when he was picking up the used condoms on the parking lot.
Well, that... That's a good time. That's a good time, yeah. Yep, the dream of Hollywood, man. What's your dream? Yeah, good times. Oh, another terrible one. I was a Jägermeister girl. Oh, right, collective groan. So that was like so, and I remember, oh, there are no kids in the room. I remember going over to Barney's Beanery and, you know, in the little awful outfit that you're in, and I walked up to the curb and some guy pulled his car right up in front and he was doing something to himself at that moment. And that was, then I went to Barney's and these two women just started punching each other. And I was like, this is my last day as a Jägermeister girl ever. So yeah, that was, but that was when I was trying to be an actor. That was Hollywood fun. Yeah. Good times. Doesn't match the condoms, but it's pretty close. And on that note, hi!
Hi, I'm Alexandra. I'm from the Geekly Grind.
Hi.
How does it feel to be honest and open about your love for Dungeons & Dragons on Critical Role?
I love it! I love it! I want to roll this D20 right now. Here's the thing. I never knew what... this feels really good. I never knew... Like, when I was a kid, nobody I knew played Dungeons & Dragons. I sort of heard, like, a rumor of it, and I was like, what is that satanic thing happening? But it was nobody ever did it out in the open. Nobody ever talked about it. So I never played until I got on Critical Role. That's the first time I ever rolled... Well, the first time I rolled a die was at Patty's while Matt and I were trying to come up with my stats for Zara. But after that, then I realized, oh, this is improv. This is improv, and you have to say, instead of saying yes to the exercise, you have to say yes to the die. So once you roll, it's just like, and I go to hit the direwolf in the flank with my sword in hopes to kill it. Roll. You roll a 20, and you kill it, and you become this great warrior. You roll one, and you get your leg bitten off, and you have to say yes. It's so great, even when it completely foils your plans, and you realize, oh, okay, well... I wanted to do that, but that didn't work. And how good you roll sometimes is how your character is developed as well. So I just think it's fantastic, and it's a great way for in a world where everybody is playing video games or on their phone alone, to actually get people in a room together or on the internet together to problem solve and improv as a group. I think is fantastic. So it's this collective world building with problem solving and stupidity and fun, and all of these problems that you must solve can be related to the problems you have to solve in the real world. It's all a metaphor. So I think it's fantastic, and it's an unbelievably empowering experience. I mean, I talked my way out of having sex with a frog king last time by altering self into the frog queen and talking like Bane, and I woke up the next day and I was like, I can do anything, you know? I mean, it was, and the day after Rhyme Fang, that next morning, the week in between the first and second time when we were, you know, when we had to deal with the frost giants on Critical Role, I spent the whole week going, would mass suggestion work? What if I tried mass suggestion on it? You know, and people are like, you got to get into the booth. You get, you know, Zach Levi's waiting for you. Oh, okay, okay, okay. Hey, Zach, do you play D&D? And do you think mass suggestion would work on frost giants? And he was like, oh, Mary, you're such a nerd. And he loved it. And I love, yeah, I just think it's fantastic. And I think it's weird. Isn't it weird? For a while, it was like Texas Hold'em, and there was all this card playing. So, and that was on for like 10 years. Like, Texas Hold'em was the thing. And it's all about sort of competing against each other and being sneaky against each other. And now what's sort of on the rise and what's huge right now is this creative game playing, you know, which can be either a positive or a negative thing depending on your choices. But I just think it's fantastic. And it's getting, and it doesn't matter how old you are. If I am a lesson in anything, it's that you're never too old to do anything, to create something, to pursue a dream, to fall in love. Steve and I got engaged in September. So you're never too old for anything, you know? So I think D&D is fantastic. As Matt says, I love D&D. So yeah, I do. I really do. I want to play. I want to play right now. Roll for initiative.
I'm a DM.
You are? There's some games going on this weekend. I know. You're welcome.
Kind of sparking off of that, what's your perspective of how anime culture, fan culture, convention culture has kind of exploded in the past 10 to 15 years?
Well, I think it's amazing because I think people who sort of are growing up, well, look, I mean, we all get bullied, right? I mean, most of us at some point or another for liking something that someone else thought was weird. Well, this is weird, and you can come here and fly your weird flag as high and as proudly as you want. So this is a place where people come, hopefully, to not get bullied and to enjoy their love for something that isn't necessarily mainstream. But the more you realize it, the more you realize that, like, I've met scientists who are like, I grew up fascinated with the technology from Ghost in the Shell. NASA bases most of a lot of what they do on what Gene Roddenberry dreamed of, you know. So I feel like it's always kind of been there, but it's not like taboo anymore. Our friend Bobby Hall, who's a rapper named Logic, got in touch with Steve to be on his album because he loved Cowboy Bebop. So all of a sudden, they're at New York Comic Con, and there's Logic and Steve up on the stage, and you can see the two different factions, right? The rappers and the anime nerds, you know, and animation and Toonami nerds and everybody else. And all of a sudden, you saw this sort of coming together, like, oh yeah, I know that show. Oh, I love that song. So I think the veil between the worlds is getting thinner and thinner. As it should be, because there's science is involved in all of this now as well. So, and I think people are getting a different idea of what it's like to be an adult too now. I don't know. At least I am. Yeah.
Hey, honestly, after your Jaeger Girl story, I have to ask this.
Okay.
What is the craziest thing that's ever happened to you in the recording booth?
Oh. Well, it's usually some sort of bodily fluid or bodily function. Let's see. When I was brought in on Halo to do one of the characters that just gets beat up. I'm basically just there for your beating pleasure, as it were. And they said, all right, we're going to set up a thing. It's a sound set, and you're just going to parrot. And it's like, we want you to just match what the guy did. And just, I said, okay, well, how many of them are there? He says, they're about 35, 40. I said, okay, well, if you just put them with, like, a second in between, I can, you know, parrot it back. So if he's going, ugh, I can go, ugh, huh, huh, And it turns out it was Steve that I was parroting at the time. And we got through about 30 of them, and I think probably around there, during one of them, I farted. And I looked into the booth at everybody else, and everybody's still marking off stuff. And I was like, nobody caught it. And we finished, like, I said, we good, guys? And like, yeah, that was great. I said, okay, thanks. So now I know that I farted in Halo, and there's something very exciting about that and wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, everybody's funny and everything else, but it's usually, I've had actresses, when I was directing them, their water break. I've had two ready for pregnancies. I've had one pregnant who's like, I just need a bucket during in-between takes. I'll just throw up. And I'm like, okay, that's good. But that's not embarrassing. That's just, that's the beginning of life and wonderful things. But yeah, but farting is usually it.
What's your advice to people that want to pursue voice acting or just entertainment in general?
Be an actor. Above all, I mean, underneath, at the base of everything is your ability to tell a true story. And the only way to do that is to be able to access how to do that from within yourself. If you can do voices, great. I love it. If that's all you can do and you can't fill it with a character, then you just made a cake of frosting with nothing on the inside. So do it because you love it, because it's not going to start paying unless you get very lucky. But be an actor. Take improv, and you have to be where the work is. You know, there's if you want to do anime, most of it is in Texas right now. Original animation, most of it is in L.A. There's a lot of good stuff happening right now in Canada as well. And I think New York, 4Kids used to be in New York, but I'm not sure that they're there anymore. And I think they used to do Pokemon and stuff. So I think most of the commercial, a lot of the commercial work is usually happening out of New York. So eventually you're going to have to be where the work is if you want to do it.
Thanks.
Sure.
Considering that Ghost in the Shell has returned to Toonami, it's been on multiple times, things like that, how do you feel about the show's overall legacy, especially considering it did get a Hollywood movie? It seems to be a fan favorite of a lot of Toonami fans.
I think it's amazing. I mean, I think it was so ahead of its time in terms of, and we're smack in the middle of it now. It's the Jurassic Park, you know, just because you can does that necessarily mean that you should? I mean, if you can create a body to put a soul or a ghost into, what does that do to us as human beings? With the advancement of technology, of not having to sit in a room with anyone and just be able to do this all day long, we're missing the tactile part of our existence. So what is that doing to us psychologically? And I feel like Ghost in the Shell captured a lot of those questions, that at what point does the science of what we can achieve get in the way of our humanity, or will it continue to flow together like a DNA spiral at some point, you know? Or are we just going to make Tyrannosaurus Rexes and we'll be gone in a couple of years, you know? Who knows? Yeah, it could. But I think the technology of the situation really brought up a lot of moral issues and ethical issues about humanity that have been around forever, you know? I mean, it was just told in a very unique way.
Thank you.
Sure.
So, I was very happy to hear you voice the action news anchor Dynamite Watkins.
Dynamite Watkins!
In OKKO.
Yes!
The Hero.
Yes!
So, as the show gets animated, after you record the lines, you know, the complete opposite of dubbing anime,
yeah,
did that give you the chance to add something to Dynamite and her personality within the recording booth?
Yeah, without a doubt, because she's sort of a mix of Diane Sawyer and a world-class wrestler, right? So I could play around with and choose the moments of when to go into wrestler mode, when to go back to the Diane Sawyer mode, and they give you a lot of freedom. It's just so much fun. You really feel like you're playing, you know, and especially because we do okay with usually all the actors in the booth. So that one big episode, which was all... the whole cast was there, so we got to really play off each other, and that's something you don't get to do in anime or when you're working solo, is that there's magic that happens between actors, especially if you get people that start to feel very comfortable and confident and who can improv. Oh man, the stuff you'll get is just gold. It's really fantastic. So you sort of end up feeding off of each other and encouraging each other within the booth. So yeah, she was great. She's okay. Really fun to play.
I hope that I see more of her in future episodes.
Yeah, well, I think she just came out with a game. Like, she's the lead in one of the Dynamite Watkins games. It's a game on your phone, an app.
Really?
Well, these kids and their apps, something like that. I don't know what it is, but yeah. So check it out.
So within the world of being nerds and fictional stuff, we tend to find ourselves falling in love with fictional characters, which we call the phenomenon of waifus and husbandos.
Yes.
Do you yourself have a waifu or a husbando?
Spike Spiegel.
Tell that to Steve. He wasn't sure.
He knows exactly. I've said it so many times. So much so that it was my first job directing, so I didn't know what I was doing. And it was Steve's first lead, and he says he didn't know what he was doing. So we were kind of stumbling through this together. And the more I watched Spike, because I got to hear and really get immersed in the Japanese version as well. As I was preparing to direct it, I was just watch it over and over and over again, and I fell in love with the Japanese actor who played Spike. But then Steve came in, and I was like, oh, what? You know, okay, that's real good. If we ever see Julia, I'm playing her. You know, it's just like I became obsessed with Spike Spiegel. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's so badass. He's so wonderful and conflicted, and he's got this past that you don't know about. He's just sort of the bad boy, you know, but you can tell that within there is a very deep well, you know. So, yeah. Yeah, he's beautiful. I love Spark.
Love it. Great.
How did you make the jump from voice acting to voice directing?
They called. They asked. I got a degree in theater in college, and then I went to grad school in Texas because I was too scared to get out in the real world, and I didn't want to go back to New Jersey. I love New Jersey, but I just didn't feel like my future was there, so I delayed my entrance into reality by going to grad school for an additional 3 years. And I did a little bit of directing. I don't think I even directed in grad school. I did in college. I think I directed one play. And when I started working for Zero Limit Productions, they had Wendy Lee, Leah Sargent, Bridget Hoffman, Kevin Seymour. So they had a lot of directors. But the company grew so fast that they had too many shows and not enough directors. And the week before they called, I went on my last on-camera audition, and it was such an awful experience and degrading. And I just remember looking up and saying, I know I'm supposed to be here because I'm here, but I don't think I'm supposed to be doing this. I've been banging my head against the on-camera door for years with limited success. But I'm here, so I'm supposed to be here. Please give me a sign. And the next week I got a call about Bebop. And they said, do you want to direct this show? And instantly I was terrified. I was like, I'm going to fail. And so I instantly knew I had to do it, you know, because anytime you get a challenge like that, you got to say yes. That's how you end up jumping out of a plane, you know. You get some great experiences that way. So that was it. They asked. And then they showed me the opening sequence of the tank, and I was like, wow. I turned to Kevin. I was like, why aren't you directing this? Because he directed Akira and Ghost in the Shell. And he's like, because I'm too busy, Mary. Had I known, you never would have gotten it. And I'm like, oh, I love you, Kevin. So, so they asked. And that was it. And that's when I felt like, oh, now I'm starting to understand what they were trying to teach me in graduate school about character development and using the voice, and things started to come into place, and I felt so much more at home than I ever did on camera. And I continue to do voice acting, and the more voice acting I do, I feel like, I hope, the better a director I become, and the more directing I do, I hope, the better voice actor I become. So it's a very wonderful symbiotic relationship between being able to do both.
So when you're working with actors, it seems common nowadays that a lot of actors who are primarily known for their on-screen work get into voice work. Do you ever find a particular challenge in like having to train them how to work differently when?
Yeah.
Without, you know, using facial expressions.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. It's just all of a sudden, you know, it's I can see what I find most is that voice actors who primarily do voice acting are always on the page, and they're always sort of in there and reading, and they're They never look at me, but when, because I usually end up reading as a director, I'll read with the actor, because I always feel like if you play off of someone, you're going to get a more natural response, because the base, you know, line of what acting is listen, respond. That's what we do all day long. That's all it is. So if they have someone to respond to, and I find that they'll memorize lines and we'll be acting with each other like this, but they'll look at me with the eyebrow, and I'm like, okay, I love it. I can't hear that eyebrow, though. So put the eyebrow in the voice, because we can't see it. We can animate it, and we will, but put a little bit of it in the voice. So it's definitely a learning curve to get people who are more used to using their physicality to just using their voice. It's a very specialized skill, and it usually takes a little bit of adjustment. People might come in with a little sort of lower energy than they normally would, and Diedrich Bader, who's this amazing voice actor and on-camera actor, says, when you think of animation, always start 10% more energy than you normally would on screen. Just start there, and you're usually pretty good. Even in the intimate scenes, you know, I mean, it's just raise it up a little bit. And I think that most people aren't used to doing that, if they're just used to doing on camera, especially if they're theater performers. That's a whole different thing. Tangled's cut where you have so many Broadway people on Tangled, and they're just instantly, yeah, you know, and then sometimes we have to pull them down a little bit. But I find with on-camera actors sometimes, especially if they're done, you know, a lot of intimate stuff, they're used to being very quiet and very low-key and everything. It's like, okay, that's great. That's what we want for the scene. Just up at about 10%, and then we'll go from there and, you know, start to carve their way into that. So I think after a while they find it's really freeing because they don't have to worry about what they're wearing and hitting a mark and looking off somewhere, or, you know, making sure they found their light or anything else. It's all we do is focus on the voice and building a character through the voice. So after a while they're like, this is great, you're just playing in here. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it's work, but it is. It's a very freeing experience.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
I'm not sure if you heard this, but have you ever heard of the Mel Blanc test?
I know Mel Blanc is my idol, but... are these like Rorschach tests for cartoons?
Kind of. I was actually going to ask your thoughts on the Mel Blanc test, where an actor portrays a character that's basically imitating none of their own characters.
So, give me an example.
There's an old Bugs Bunny cartoon where... Mel Blanc played both Bugs and Daffy, and it was like the Rabbit Season Duck Season 1.
And oh, yeah, and Elmer in the same scene.
Yeah. Basically what happened was Bugs came in imitating Daffy, and Daffy came in imitating Bugs, and he was able to kind of go between them almost seamlessly.
Yeah. Well, that's just a genius, you know. That's an absolute genius. That's a Tom Kenny. That's a Dee Baker. That's a Rob Paulsen. That's a you know, Gray Griffin or a Tara Strong or Kari Wahlgren. I mean, these are... I'm directing Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, that Kari plays Dorothy and Ozma. And this crazy rabbit! That's sort of drunk. And she's just flawless back and forth. And it's all the scenes of Dorothy and Ozma, and then sometimes she'll also be playing like General Ginger in the same episode. And so it's all in the same scene. And it's just the Kari Wahlgren scene, you know, or Lorraine Newman is doing the Wicked Witch and this crazy character named Sassy. So it's kind of amazing to see. I love it when actors can do it, even if they have to take a beat to readjust mentally, you know, because it's different mental space where each character lives, but I think that's just absolute genius. I don't know that I could do that. I'm not sure that I ever have. So.
Growing up, what was your, not eureka moment, but when did you realize you wanted to be a voice actor, that this was the route you wanted to take, or was there ever really a moment when you knew you wanted to, and you just kind of went with the flow, or...
Well, when I was a kid, I mean, I watched too many cartoons all the time. My dad would come home and put his hand on the TV and say, would you stop watching cartoons? You know, because I'd come home and Thundercats would be on, or, I mean, I just loved cartoons. And it was his fault. He sat me down and said, look at Bugs Bunny. You're going to learn about music and Shakespeare and timing and everything else. And I just said, okay. And so I don't think I ever saw it. Even when I was in, you know, because I was theater, I was Shakespeare, it never occurred to me until, yeah, like I kind of just walked into a door facing the wrong way and had no idea. And I realized, oh man, this is fantastic. And it really, because you can't really make a living on anime, the contract, that it just doesn't pay enough. But then I got into directing, and I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. I want to let go of the on-camera, and I want to focus on voiceover in the sense of the whole shebang. Directing, acting, singing for like Silent Hill and stuff. So that's where I felt comfortable. That's where I found a home in my community. A lot of people find that in the on-camera world or in the theater, and for me, that's the community that opened their arms to me. So I ran in wide open. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Considering your reaction with where I write for with Toonami people, you seem to be a fan of the blog.
Yeah.
How do you feel that it's been around for so long, especially being able to influence not only fans, whether they're older, but now with this new iteration with younger fans,
trying
to kind of keep anime in the forefront of television, too?
I think it's amazing. I hope it continues to go and grow and because is there an anime network?
It's streaming now.
It's all streaming and it's on Crunchyroll, but you know, I want to be able to not be able to sleep at 3 a.m. and turn on the TV and just like, oh, Bobo's on it, you know, or something weird, you know, or wonderful. And so many of my friends, it's like, I just sort of get to sit up and I have a slightly different perspective because I get to listen to my friends act, you know, because we all did it together and it was a really small community of people that were doing it at the time. So I love it. But what it's doing now is that it's opening the eyes of a whole new generation to what has been the old stuff. And the new stuff, you know, like Attack on Titan and Hunter, is it Hunter versus Hunter or something?
Hunter.
Daka. So it's, I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. Because it's not just for kids, you know. I mean, there's a lot of American animation that is for adults, but it's a very sort of, like with Archer or The Simpsons or American Dad, this still has, I mean, it's all comedy based and it's sort of arch and it's wonderful and it's funny, but anime still tells very complex stories in that runs in a different direction, you know, that's more adult theme, that's more dramatic. So I think it's terrific that it's all there.
Thank you.
Sure.
So one question I'd love to ask our voice actors.
My favorite swear word.
So we have this thing called Three Character Island. Basically, it's if you found yourself stuck on a deserted island, which three characters that you have played in the past would you like to have with you to keep you sane until your imminent rescue, and why?
Well, let's see. Erd, Hilda, and let's see. I think Erd, Jura, and Helba, because they can all fly. And I wouldn't be on the island for very long. Unless we wanted to be there, you know, which is good. That way you get the option to stay as opposed to being forced. But people who can fly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, why not? Zara might be fun to have there, too. We'd always have a nice warm fire if we ever needed one.
What or who do you think is the sexiest character you have ever played?
Ooh. I don't know. Jeez. I mean, the earlier stuff, like Erd and Jura, were pretty bombshell-alicious. You know, these are women that hadn't seen their feet for a couple of years, if you know what I mean, because they're very well endowed. And they could fly, and they were all, you know, tits akimbo, as they used to call it. I don't know. What's your definition of sexy? You know?
The most provocative voice, or like the most alluring, or maybe even, I don't know.
Well, I think physically, one of those two, I think in terms of being a complex woman, I think the Major is just, because she's badass, but she's also got vulnerability in there as well. She can take care of herself, but she also has to question things at time. So I think she's the most well-rounded woman. But Yeah. I don't know. It's hard. It depends on what the definition is. I guess the one who wears the least amount of clothing. I don't know. I was going to say Spike, but I never played him. A character I didn't play, I thought Faye was just phenomenal. Faye was just so complex and coquettish and wonderful and always cool, I would imagine. Usually never hot because it's the very lack of clothing. But I don't know. Which one? What do you think?
Well, it would have to either be the Major or Kuranai.
Yeah, I loved Kuranai. I kind of feel like, man, she gets pregnant, like, well, put her in the house. I'm like, she's this all-powerful genjutsu casting, and you're going to... Come on, people. It's nice that she's watering plants, but, you know. Yeah, I loved Kuranai. She was great.
So what has your experience been like as a woman in the entertainment industry?
Well, I have to say that in the animation world, I feel like an actor and a director, not a female actor or a female director. When I was doing on camera, I very specifically felt the pressures of gender. But for some reason, and look, I'm not the most girly, feminine thing out there anyway, right? I'm sort of strong, and thanks to playing the Major, I've become the sort of strong, you know, not to say that that's not feminine at all, but it's just, I'm going to dig myself a real deep one on this. For me, in being in the animation industry, I think we see ourselves as actors because... we don't have to be constrained to only playing women. We can play men. I've played a number of men over my career, which is really fun. I had the great honor of working with Pat Carroll, who played Ursula, and she got to play Falstaff on stage, and I was so blown away. I was like, wait, you mean... women can play that? I want to do that too, you know, because there are some great roles that I would love to play someday. But for some reason, I think the animation world is much less about what gender you are and more about what voice can you do, what character can you create. So I think we kind of are in this, in a place that isn't... I mean, look, sexism is everywhere and racism is everywhere, but for some reason when we come to work on our characters. I'm not coming in as a female director, although I'm proud as hell to be one, but for some reason the animation world has more female directors than I think any other part of the industry. So I don't think they see us as one or the other. It's what do you bring to the party? What do you bring to the table? You know? So I think that's wonderful. I wish that would happen more and more.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It is. There's so many female directors in animation. It's fantastic. So, yay. Speed round.
Do you have any great like convention stories that you pull out for like just one time, this thing happened?
I don't know. See, I work in a booth all day long, and you know, I barely get to see the sun, and then we come, and I think it was... it might have been here. It might have been Anime Boston. That I was talking, I was still smoking cigarettes at the time, and I was standing outside one night, and these two girls, and we came up, and we just started talking, and I knew that they were fans, and they were sort of really excited at first, and then by the end, they sort of calmed down, and we were just talking and having this great conversation, probably for like half an hour, and then got in the elevators, because it was really late, and I had to go to bed, and the girls came up in the elevator and everything, and I said, well, this is my floor. And they said, okay. Well, it was really nice. I said, it was so nice talking to you guys. They're like, yeah, me too. Thanks. Have a good night. And I got off the elevator, and the minute the doors closed, I just screaming. And I was like, you guys, I just sit in a room all day. You know, it was really, so that was sort of a weird, I call it the Sally Field Paramus Mall from Soap Dish moment. And the other one was the hairiest human being I've ever seen in my life came up without his shirt on and said, sign me! And I was like, I can't even see the skin through the forest at this point. So it was like parting. I was like, do you have a comb? So that was always fun and interesting. Yeah.
Thanks.
Sure.
All right. What would you be doing today if you hadn't gotten into the entertainment industry?
Dead. I don't know. I think now, maybe politics. I don't know. The world's getting crazy. So my dad ran for governor of New Jersey in 1980, and after that experience, I promised I would never. I hated politics, and I would never get into it. So I've tried to stay away from it. But current series of events has led to me wanting to sort of get a little bit more active in making sure that people's voices can be heard. So Courtney Taylor, J.P. Karliak, two other voice actors, and myself, this is actually Courtney's idea, are starting something called Nerds Vote. And the whole purpose of Nerds Vote, hashtag Nerds Vote, nerdsvote.com, we're putting the website together now, is to get people registered, young people especially, who may not know how easy it is to register, or who may have been moving all over the place, as young people do, so they may not have registered now. So the most, and it's nonpartisan, it's just to get people interested in the process and to get people's voices heard, because I think a lot of people think that voices, their voice doesn't mean anything, or that their vote doesn't mean anything, but that is not the case. 100%, if you've looked at the past elections all over the country, you realize how close these elections are. So if you feel passionately about something, if you care about the world around you, get out there and vote, because nerds need to be heard. And I am a huge nerd, and we need to support people getting out there and voting. Yeah, because this is our country. They work for us, damn it. I think they forget that. So we need to have our voices heard as much as possible. And what the hell? We make all these great, amazing, awesome choices in imaginary worlds. It's about time we started making our voices heard in the real one. So.
I guess to finish it up, recommend more cons during the year? Make more cons?
Yeah. So this is a crazy month. This weekend is Boston. Next weekend is Newfoundland. And I'm home the next weekend, but the Tuesday after I go to Russia for a week and a day to do 6 concerts for Silent Hill with Akira Yamaoka. For 6 concerts in a row, 6 different cities. The 4th concert's with an orchestra. I will have some CPR at one point, and then I fly back to Baltimore to do, I think it's called Universal Fan Con in Baltimore. And at some point, I'm going to sleep. It's going to be awesome. So, yeah, and then go back to work. That's the problem. I really wish that we could stay around. Steve and I have to go back to L.A. because I work Monday morning. And, you know, I'm directing, it was 6, now 5 shows. And I'm acting in 3 or 4. So I'm so grateful. But my time is insane during the week. So, yeah, but any chance we can get to come out and see people, to get out from behind the glass and come out and people and meet you guys and talk to critters and talk to anime fans and Star Wars fans and Star Trek fans. I mean, that's where I thrive too. So it's and I get to come and play with you guys, which really makes me happy more than anything else. And that's the reason why we do this. It's the reason why, I mean, Bebop was 20 years ago. You know, the fact that it's still being watched and appreciated is astounding to me, and to get to talk to people about stuff that I've worked on that I love so much that I never thought anybody would see is kind of an amazing thing. So thank you guys for having me. I'm really, really honored to be here. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Thank you. Hey. Now let's play D&D.
Thanks for coming, you guys.
Thank you, guys.